This episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts, joins me to react to Week 17, starting with Sunday Night Football. 80 points, 49ers beating the Bears 42-38. That was a ton of fun to talk about with Chuck. 49ers, man, Kyle Shanahan, he's putting it up. He's like a coach of the year candidate. He should be up there, man. But we also talk about three highs, three lows. So anybody want to win the NFC South? Talk about Texans, Chargers, Giants, Raiders, and the Tank Bowl. Much, much more. Bills, Eagles. That was fun. It was a great show. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I am your host, Nate Tice. I'm with Charles McDonald. We're coming to you right after Sunday Night Football. 80 points in Sunday Night Football. Can't wait to go over it with Chuck. This is the late hit. Ooh, 49ers, 42, Bears, 38. Chuck, we got together a little bit earlier, but good to see you again. And have you caught your breath? That game started with a pick six, and it went down to literally the final play. But yeah, good to see you. What'd you think of that game? That was something. That was fun.
I was a little worried that we were going to be here until like, well after midnight on the East Coast, based on how the pacing of that game went. Because I was looking, it was like 9-10. It was still the first quarter.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, this is going to be tough. But we got some sustained drives in the second half. We got out of here before 11:45. So we still got about the same ending time that we normally do. And, wow, what a game between the Bears and the 49ers. Caleb Williams showed out. Brock Purdy had a nice game. And I imagine that both defenses are going to want to shred the tape from this one. The pick six to open the game felt like it might have been the only noteworthy game, the only noteworthy defensive play until the actual final play of the game when the 49ers somehow just summoned, an incredible effort on the last play to squat on everything and put Caleb Williams in hell to close it out. But just kind of to add on that, you had, 42 plus 33, 75 total passing attempts with one sack. That's what today was. Every once in a while, you get these Big 12-style shootout games, and that was definitely one of them.
Yeah, this one had sneaky potential for it, because you've talked about it. Like, we started, both fairly high on the Bears defense, and both like really quickly realized, oh boy. They've gotten slightly better, but again, it's not to like good. It's more to like below average, but they started poor, outright poor. And then same with the 49ers defense, they can't rush the passer. They've been interesting because they've have a lot of young guys playing well, and guys that are like, not their first round pick, who's been hurt, other defensive player of the year candidates are hurt on IR. So it's been these young players like Upton Stout, who also got hurt tonight. But other guys, Malcolm Mustafa came back, some guys up front as well. But it's just been, the offenses have been what's carrying these teams. And it kind of just, obviously, as they put out 80 points combined tonight, that you feel that. Just listening up, you can go stat after stat. 20 combined explosive plays. 49ers put 496 total yards. Bears 440. 49ers 7.3 yards per play. Bears 6.9 yards per play. Both over 5 yards a rush. EPA, if you're into that. Both were almost near MVP quarterback level on EPA per play. The 49ers were 0.31 EP per play. Bears were at 0.28 EPA per play. You said it. Both quarterbacks, they just had opportunities to kind of like opportunities because of like great designs against, again, below average or worse defenses that like just had guys running free, and they executed. Outside the pick six, and I think Caleb had a couple misses. Collinsworth went off on him on a one on the final drive, and I was like, whoa! But they kind of reeled it back in. But I thought, they both had moments of creation. Obviously, Caleb has that, and Purdy, that's like one of his best attributes as well. And you kind of felt that as well. He had two rushing touchdowns, one a scramble, one a designed run, a zone read. Those are nice to have, like the ability to have a quarterback to get those in those situations is really nice. We talked about it. We actually didn't talk about it because the Jags game, but Trevor Lawrence, they used that with Trev. But man, Dave the Hook and Ladder, any thoughts about kind of the final play or maybe the final situation, final drive from the Bears and the 49ers defense?
It was a cool back and forth. You know, it was one of those drives where I thought both units, you know, showed their teeth. I mean, finally for the 49ers defense to have some moments there was much needed because they got killed just that whole game. But I thought even then, like, it was a strong showing from Caleb and the 49ers at the same time. Yet the the third down drive or third down play where I guess he threw it short and was, you know, Collins was kind of you know, was making some comments like that was like that was an easy throw to make. I was like, dude, you got two free runners and you're running out of there trying to because
they fade away backwards. I was like, you hope he makes it, but like the fact that it was even possible is pretty cool.
Crazy. I mean, you were it looked like I didn't count, you know, for sure, but it looked like they might have been down two blockers. You know, to rushers in that situation, because I thought it solid might have blitzed seven, or maybe they just got there so fast it looked like they blitzed seven. But still, at the end of the day, you got two free runners in your face and you almost got there. And yeah. I was like, man, like it's third down in a gotta have it situation. You know, they're obviously going on fourth down. So the fact that you didn't take a loss there is kind of okay. And then you come right back on fourth down. I don't know what the hell D Winters was looking at, because, you know, because Collinsworth, you know, they did the mug look and then they dropped back.
Yeah, and dropped out.
Dude,
yeah.
Dude, D was like, it was like,
he never once looked.
No, the way he was supposed to. No. Dude, that area is the middle of the field's covered, but your zone was not covered. And it was like infomercial level bad. Like, if you were, is this what your linebackers look like in coverage? And she just kind of like got happy feet and not knowing where to go. And then level was wide open for the first down. And then, honestly, I thought the final play after the hook and ladder, which was ballsy to say the least. Yeah.
No timeouts.
Yeah. And it's not college. You know, the clock does not stop after the first down. So,
couple of rookies, DeAndre Swift out there. That's a little scary, dude.
A little scary. But you got there and you had the final play. Yeah. Honestly, I thought the final play was, once they showed like the end zone view, like the end zone tape view, I guess, from the behind Caleb, dude, there was nothing, absolutely nothing there.
They flooded
They flooded it. The blocking broke down. And then, I mean, the fact again, like, you even got a pass off in that situation. Pretty impressive. So just all around a good day for the quarterbacks. I mean, you had a chance to win this game at the end when Brock Purdy had a 50% conversion rate on his dropbacks. 50% of his dropbacks went for a first down. I mean, that's nuts. I mean, Caleb was right behind him at 39%. Like, both of those would be number one and number two in the NFL this year. But 50%, the fact that he had a chance to win that game goes to show a testament to like where the Bears offense is. And again, like, this is, I've been saying, it's one of the better offenses in the league now. And I know we still got a whole playoff to get through and all that, but I'm so excited for what this team looks like next year. I mean, they really could have an incredible offense next year.
Yeah, I know. This feels like, just, you can see this every kind of month, them getting better and better, a little bit more sound. Them and the Jags. You kind of can feel it kind of all coming together and all the pieces working. And it just feels like the young guys are kind of getting it. Ben Johnson kind of figured out how to use them. Guys are just getting better. I mean, but Luther Burden, I'm full on believer. I was kind of like, I middled him in the draft. And he's so explosive. He's so good with the ball in his hands. He had that play in the final drive where he juked the guy and almost still got out of bounds. Got the first down and still almost got out of bounds, which was a remarkable play. And he's big. He's got good size and he's willing to get in there. Him and Loveland had the drops on the final drive, but they kind of made up for it. Like you said, like, you're excited where these teams are going. And same with the 49ers. The 49ers have just been, they've had so many injuries, offense and defense. And it's just been so cool to kind of see at different times, different guys have to take kind of like the priority role. Kittle was out tonight. And if you saw him the entire game, he was signaling personnel, which I was just like, oh man, I think he's a coach's kid. Like, that's a low-key thing about Kittle. I think he's a coach's kid, too. And like, he plays it away a little bit, you know, all wrestling, all that stuff. And he's like, he's a coach's kid, too. You know, he's a geek. But I just noticed, too, but the 49ers numbers always are going to be good with Shanahan. but now the run game is kind of catching up to what the passing game has been, which is one of the best in the NFL. But the run game has been finally kind of catching up. I think people just assumed it's been good this year. It hasn't been efficient this year. Like CMC has been truly a workhorse, like truly like taking a lot of gritty carries. Like it's been like a bottom 10 efficiency, like an efficiency way run game. And now it's they're 11th in rushing success rate. They're second in overall success rate. Bears are 11th. The Bears are second in rushing success rate. The 49ers are second in passing success rate. Explosive plays, Bears are fourth. You know, it's just the EPA per play, 49ers are seventh, Bears are 10th. EPA per dropback, 49ers are sixth, Bears are ninth. It's just like these two teams, these two offenses are legit, legit. And I'm not even splitting it up. Those are full season marks. And I bet you if I split it to second half numbers, they'd be just even more of a jump or even higher in how they rank and everything. So just fun. The last play, they dropped friggin' eight guys and had a spy. okay. And Ozzie Trapillo, a rookie left tackle, like went inside and instead of like, and Bryce Huff is just running free. And it's just kind of like, no. I think it's Bryce Huff. And it's that block that guy. And I mean, it was just, yeah, they were just kind of, they were damned on it.
Yeah. I mean, on the goal line, like that's functionally like drop nine. If you have a spy, yeah. There's so little space. It's just,
yeah. I know.
Holy crap. That's funny.
I've talked about it a couple times in the last few weeks. That's what stinks about the red zone. It's just like you just flood bodies out there. It's like that's why you need a guy that can run around or a guy that can like just fire a rocket in there. Like because they just have the boom, boom. Everything's just boom, boom in the red zone, especially down there. Yeah, that was just one of those plays. Like the Bears, try to overload it. And actually, like one the real answer, not that I don't blame Caleb for not looking there because I think it was what's his face from A&M, number 20. But it was one on one. Yeah, one on one with him. I bet you if it was in Dunze, he would take in Dunze, you know, yeah. Like at the X spot. It's kind of just like if you pick your matchup kind of thing. So one of those things. 49ers just had a perfect call for it. Yeah.
Are the Rams boxed out of the number one seed now?
I think they are.
I think they are. Yeah. Between Seattle, I was playing around with the playoff machine. It looks like next week between Seattle and San Francisco is for the number one seed.
Yes, it is. Wild. Yep. The Rams. Yep. 100% wild card. I know. And I actually feel the best about the Rams more than basically anybody. Yeah. I mean, you just look at, like the New York Times one model, hold on, like their projected standings. So they have Seahawks 1, Eagles 2, Bears 3, Panthers 4, Rams 5, 49ers 6, Packers 7. Packers are locked in at 7. So, okay. So Rams, right now it'd be Panthers, Rams 4, 5. That would be, I know they lost in that game, but they outperformed them in that game. It was just the two turnovers in the red zone. But it just kind of just when you look at the matchups, like right now it would be a Bears 49ers rematch, 3-6, which would be fun. And then Eagles Packers, which, yeah, I don't know. Just these matchups are going to be super, super interesting. Any other thoughts on we didn't really talk about it, but also 49ers though, the defense isn't quite there. It's not their fault. They're young. They have injuries. They don't have a pass rush, though, which makes me worried once they get into playoff time. But their offense is legit, as it always is under Shanahan. And seeing Pearsall out there, I was like, oh, yeah, you guys are getting healthy a little bit. So if Kittle comes back, you got Pearsall and you got Jennings. And, you know, it's like this offense like can keep up with anybody. And really, NFC, yeah. It's just like kind of some flawed teams in there right now, kind of feeling that way.
Yeah, you know? I'm still amazed the 49ers are this good after, like, you dump three first-round picks into a quarterback that you got nothing out of, and you're still here. And, like, functionally.
And Ayuk is not there.
Right. I mean, it's just a machine. Maybe Kyle Shanahan should just win coach of the year every single year until proven otherwise. Like, he would get my vote this year for sure.
He would get my vote, too. Like, we did the award show right now, I've been kind of thinking that the whole entire season.
This is nuts.
It's been kind of, they haven't played like a matchup we've broken down. Like, we kind of just get them in afterthoughts, like, you know, and review shows. So it's just one of these things I've just been watching when I'm like watching film and stuff. I'm like, it's just the offense. It's just a new level. It's a new version of Shanahan finding a bunch of explosives and gashing linebackers, and like, you know, they're doing more drop back stuff. It's just, it's cool. It's cool to always just see. I don't trust the defense, but it's, I hope to see some more shootouts in the playoffs. It's always fun.
The 49ers are on a 6-game winning streak. They scored 40 points 3 times in that span, and then another 37 point game against the Titans. So they figured it out. Yeah, doing pretty good.
Wow. I know. You just even look at their stats. Like, that was what's so remarkable. I was just looking without even splitting it. Like, because I know it's been even better as the season's gone along, but it's just like they're green. You know, on True Media, you can just do it by rank. It's just green, 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 green. Just as it always is with the 49ers. Yep. All right. Charles and I got together with 3 highs, 3 lows earlier. That was a lot of fun. And we made an interesting day even more interesting by talking about it for over an hour. We're pushing on Pixar movie length. I think we're the length of Toy Story 2. I don't know if we got any thoughts on the Jags? Just before we close it out, kind of we have to keep the mention of Jags.
Oh, 12 wins? Never thought I'd see the day.
How about that? I know. Shout out to Liam Cohn. Really shout out to the offense. They're pretty good. I know. They're live. They're live. AFC South. Got a couple guys cooking. A couple teams cooking.
The last thing I have. Phillip Rivers, was it worth it? Was it really worth it, pal? Come on. That was embarrassing.
He threw one corner out today to Downs that got me going a little bit, fired me up. But that it also might have been, it should have been maybe over. I actually think it did get challenged, but it stood. But you could see a couple moments where that ball died on him. The pick, I think they just knew what was coming.
Yeah.
They jumped that, and he didn't have the arm strength to overcome that when they jumped it. I think they knew what was coming. And then there was a go ball to Pierce. It was just like, you know, I think, and Riley Leonard starting next week against the Texans. Cheers. Have fun with that. So get to see him run around a little bit. No, but it was AFC South, though. AFC is wide open. We talk about the Bills, Eagles. Talk about that those Texans. They just pulled off against the Chargers. We talk about Seahawks, Panthers, because anybody want to win the NFC South? It was a fun show with Chuck. All that, 3 highs, 3 lows, much more. See you guys after the break. Hello and welcome to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Here we are live recapping and reacting to Week 17, a spread out smorgasbord of football games that seem to be happening on every day, including some dual action on Saturday. We had some college football and NFL going on, which was fun. We had some Christmas games that I reacted to solo, but we also had a full slate of games on Sunday. And to help me recap to all this action, that was a lot of backup quarterbacks. That's maybe in a lot of sloppy weather on the East Coast where you're at right now. Charles McDonald joining me as always on Sunday. How you doing, Chuck? How was everything? How was your Christmas? How was today? How were these games and the reaction to your eyeballs and brain?
Oh, man. It was a good Christmas. I always forget that when you get to this time of year and you play 3 games on Thursday, you play another 2 on Saturday, it doesn't leave a whole lot left for Sunday, especially when you put 7 games in the early bracket compared to 2 in the later bracket. And I just want to know who at the NFL office, even back in February and March when they decided to schedule, who thought that we needed like an isolated Raiders Giants game here, like just one across from Eagles Bills? Because I don't think anybody would have been really high on that at any point this year. But it was an interesting day. Like you said, a lot of backup quarterbacks. You really kind of feel the preseason 2.0 at this point in the year, where a lot of players are injured. With 2 weeks left in the season, most teams are just out of playoff contention. So it gets a little sloppy, but we had some games that were on TV today. And I think that's about, how we can put it. I hope we get to the Aaron Rodgers, Myles Garrett stuff today, because that was repulsive football. Absolutely disgusting on everyone involved.
You will not put me on a highlight reel performance that Aaron Rodgers had today. You will not get this record on me or performance from Aaron Rodgers today.
And I'll say Miles helped him out a little bit. He helped him out a little bit there, but we'll get into that.
We'll get to it. We'll start as always on every Sunday. We'll do the ups and downs of week 17 with three highs, three lows. Let's get into it. All right. We'll start kind of Quentin Tarantino style with the end, which was the Eagles-Bills playing in a sloppy game in the rain. Finished 13-12. It felt like a game that should finish 13-12. We had the Eagles only having, I believe, one successful play the entire second half. We had Vic Fangio and I think the Eagles pass defense having a extremely good game that was forcing Josh Allen to make a lot of hero plays, which led to some good moments, led to some iffy moments, couldn't take like 20-yard sacks, knocking him out of field goal range. But Eagles pull off this win, 13-12, big extra point blocked by Jalen Carter, and you felt his his performance throughout the day. He had an insta-sack on Osiris Torrance. That was, I think they went against each other in college. But yeah, that was probably some bad flashbacks to the cocktail party when those two matched up in college. But sloppy game. I don't know where you want to start, but the Eagles pulled this one off. And I thought the Bills had some high highs, but then very sloppy on offense throughout the game. But how about this? Great defensive performances from Sean McDermott, Vic Fangio, and these defenses, yeah. I thought, throughout the game. And the Eagles pulled this one off.
Definitely. The defenses were outstanding today. And I think for the Eagles, this is like, I don't know if this, how you would rate this year, but I guess what I would say is like, that's kind of the performance that you kind of maybe have been waiting for them for a little bit, just to fully just dominate a game with all the talent that they have. I mean, Jalen Carter was unbelievable today, even beyond like just some of the pressure that he got on Cyrus Torrance. I thought he had a really strong game and just got Josh Allen to play a bizarrely bad game for himself. It just didn't feel like he trusted anything that was going on. A lot of sloppy mistakes. I thought even on the fourth down where he scrambled and tried to get to the end zone, you kind of got the situation you wanted where you have Zach Bond in the air like with a two-way go, and you just let him make the tackle instead of just dumping off to Ty Johnson, who was wide open, standing right next to the front pylon for a touchdown. And you know, I've kind of grown accustomed to Josh Allen making that pass there and scoring the touchdown, and obviously would have alleviated some concerns there towards the end of the game. But they were just so sloppy, and it just felt like he was pressing in a way that was really unnecessary. I mean, the third down sack, that was like some day three rookie stuff that you'll see. Where some of these guys, like the running back, and they're taking 20-yard sacks. It was just really sloppy. So I think that was concerning from his part, especially because he's kind of had like a lot more, I guess, inconsistencies to his game over the past month, which is, I don't know if he just needs a break or if he's feeling frustrated, what's going on around him, but not the Josh Allen that we're used to seeing. And if he plays like that, going to the playoffs, they're probably going to be out of here pretty quickly because just too many negative plays and too many plays we're not getting where, everything that you probably hope to get from some of these drives. So sloppy game. And then even then at the end, he still showed like why you got to keep giving him chances with the ball, because he is going to make some incredible plays and just the physical talent. Right. It's just one of those guys where
you got to live and die going with it. It's the hardest thing. I know. I just
think he needs a little factory reset once the season's over. Just take a breather and get back to it. But he's a little off his game right now.
Yeah. I think how you put it when you say he just doesn't trust anything, that's kind of how it feels a little bit. I think the best stat to kind of point at, because Josh Allen, like I think one of the to his credit, because he runs around a lot, does a lot of kind of stuff where he's Professor Chaos, which could be good and bad. He's kind of weaned the bad out and made the good better. But then this season, it felt like the bad creep back in. It feels more like 2019 Josh Allen in that regard. And I think maybe that some of it is because of some of the pass catchers that he has and the lack of faith. I mean, Brandon Cooks is the deep play threat. Tyrell Shavers is the deep play threat. I do like Shavers, by the way. I think he could be like a 3-and-D MBS type, like blocker and deep ball. I think he's legit. Like he could be like a number three for you, but like a dirty work guy. But I think the stats to point at, Josh Allen this year has an 8% sack rate, the highest of his career. 2019, his first full year starting, it was 7.6%. That was the highest before. Last year, it was 2.8%. And the offensive line has had some injuries, and I do think that they do have some protection weaknesses, especially when they're in five-man protection, which we've seen. Falcons game is the biggest example of that. But other times, too, where they just let free runners come. some of that's design, some of that I don't really like it, but it's just like how they kind of get away with things. But when Josh Allen's making guys miss, you don't feel it as much. When he's getting sacked 8% of the time, which is high, that you're feeling it. His pressure to sack is 20.3% this year. That's like an above average rate. Last year was 8%, which is one of the lowest rates, I think, on record. And it, usually it hovers around 10, 13, 14, good rates. But this year, it's like he's just taking those sacks, and it's just like we're so used to him, yeah, having some plays where he loses his mind completely. But I think like he had mitigated so much of the negative that we kind of forgot about this. And I think that's creeped back in. So it's the highs are still there, but the lows are just there's so many more lows today. And I thought it was Vic Fangio, like child's play against Joe Brady and some of the passing game stuff. Like,
yeah,
they ran so many crossing routes and those safeties. And Cooper DeJean got, they even said it at the end of the broadcast, had like set a career high for tackles in a game. He was sawing guys off. I mean, he crushed Ty Johnson on that last swing. It was because it's just so predictable from formations. There was like the shot play to James Cook where he leaks through and Zach Bond's running for it with it step for step. And I love Zach Bond, but he shouldn't be running step for step with James Cook. Why he can do that is because he knew what was coming. So he was already running before the route was coming. So I just think that it's they're a weird team because it's like now I'm feeling better about the defense, but it just – then the offense has a game like this. I mean, just credit to Vic Fangio and I think the Eagles DBs, because there's so much, it felt like a lot of coverage sacks happening, which made Josh Allen start compounding stuff as the game went along.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just frustrating. I think if you're a Bills defender, you probably feel like that performance was wasted a little bit, because the Eagles had one first down in the second half. The Eagles, they ran 18 plays for 16 yards in the second half. 2.67 yards per drive. 84% of their drives didn't gain a first down. 0% passing success rate. 5% overall success rate. And you lost that game. I mean, that's brutal. That's brutal, because it's really hard to play defense like that cleanly. The Eagles averaged 0.2 first downs per drive. Or 0.2 first downs per drive in the second half. How do you not get that done? And when you start looking at even just like some of the discrepancies, the Bills, they have positive EPA per play in the second half. Obviously, the Eagles were nowhere close to positive EPA per play in the second half. Eagles averaged minus 1.07 EPA per dropback. So every dropback, they're losing a point's worth of value in the second half. Just really dominant stuff from Buffalo's defense, and you got nothing to show for it. That's got to be frustrating, because you would if I told you, hey, going into this game, if I told you in the second half, the Eagles would have one first down and average less than a yard per play, you'd be like, wow, that probably got out of hand a little bit. But nope, they won this game. And they're such a bizarre team, because even when it feels bad, they still win these games. And they're 11-5 and hosting a playoff game in a couple of weeks. Really bizarre season from them.
Fighting for the 2 seed. Like, they're, I know. It's one of these things where it's just not perfect. Like, I was even looking up before, as the game was going along, I this is random because it's raining. So I was looking up stats on True Media since 2019. I could have probably looked further, but Josh Allen has the most dropbacks in the NFL since 2019 in the rain. So I was like, oh, wow, okay, that's interesting. How many? 408 dropbacks. Second place is Carson Wentz with 250. And so it's not only that the Buffalo's got crap weather, but it's just also like, yeah, we trust Josh to go make plays. You know, we trust him to do that. And then meanwhile, you see it. He also has the most career fumbles. He has a high amount of scrambles. Like, he's really effective on them. But it's like one of these things where it's just like the weather just compounds exactly the good and the bad. And I just thought that the Bills run game would maybe be able to, I mean, no, Jalen Carter was playing back full. It feels like he was healthy again. I just thought that the Bills would have the personnel to kind of like get what they wanted. I think the Eagles defense, when you get them in base, you can throw them like a good amount. Like, when they're in base defense this year or against two or fewer receivers, they've given up a 20% explosive pass rate, 30th in the NFL. And I thought it was notable, because I think Dalton Kincaid was out, that they were just like, no, we're going to play a bunch of 11. I was like, I don't know. I know you, Reggie Gilliam isn't the sexiest thing, but I think you should get some big bodies out there and chuck it. I think they're just playing the spread stuff, and all these crossers and Fangio and this defense were just sawing this stuff off. Going into the last drive, the Bills had 4 net yards per pass attempt going into the last drive, 35% passing success rate. They had a higher rushing success rate than passing success rate. The Bills did. That's what Josh Allen, at quarterback. I don't know. It was just they're a weird team, but this is actually in a weird way made me feel better about where their defense is. I still don't think their rush defense is that great, but I just don't think the Eagles rush offense is that great. And also, again, predictability. But I don't know. I think my long and the short of this, my review of this game is like, wow, that was some good defensive play calling. and I think it just made Josh Allen kind of compound some stuff. It made the quarterbacks compound the bad sides, made Jalen Hurts more safe, made him more outside throwing. He had one amazing throw on third down over the middle. I will say that, but that was in the first half, but it was just all the stuff was to the outside. All the stuff was the outside or short or escaping the pocket. I thought there were so many creepers and stuff coming up the middle that just made him a little skittish. And then I think Josh Allen playing hero ball, it made these, that's what good defense coordinators do. You make, you'll give up some, you'll give up a Shavers dunk, a Brandon Cooks deep ball, a Josh Allen scramble, but you live with that going like, okay, I'm going to make you be patient from the pocket. I'm going to snuff out your 1, 2, 3, make you get to 4. Guess what? Jalen Carter's winning, yada, yada. But yeah, I don't know. I think these are incomplete teams, but guess what? I think the playoffs are wide open for both of them. And again, in the weirdest way, the Bills actually I feel okay about, but they'd be playing. They are the most likely going to be what? The 5 seed?
The 5 seed.
I actually got to look that up. Probably 5 seed.
They'd be the 7 seed actually right now.
They're 7 seed right now? Okay.
Yeah, they'd be heading to New England to play if this playoff started right now.
Okay.
That'd be fun.
At least it'd be a guaranteed entertaining game. I guarantee that. I actually kind of want that now. So
yeah, me too.
That'd actually be pretty fun. Yeah. All right. Let's keep it there. Let's lock it in. Let's lock it in for a third matchup there. I don't know. I hate to like kind of short sell this game because it was fairly entertaining. Is like, I don't think I learned much about the Eagles, but I do. I know what their defense, the DBs can do in the pass coverage, how good they are tackling. Jalen Carter, I know he's good, but the offense kind of was like, yeah, that's their offense. And I think for the Bills, it was kind of like, this is just the passing game. I think if you can really ISO them up and take away, like make them work, make Allen work against zone over and over, I think you can kind of just take away a lot. And I don't know. This is really a performance from them. All right, let's get to high number two.
On Jalen Hurts today. He in the second half, his time to throw was higher than his average air yards per attempt. He averaged 4.02 seconds time to throw. Average air yards per attempt 3.1. So just standing back there, I don't know. And dunk it off.
Right.
He went 0-for-7. Oh, still 0-for-7 on balls that like left his hand. Like that's nuts.
Nuts. Again, the rain doesn't help that out either. I looked up the rain stats. So I looked up success rate. All right. Josh Allen was 6th in success rate in the rain. Hurts, 28th. And he's just below Zach Wilson and Joe Flacco. And just above Joe Flacco. It's because he just doesn't trust anything to like throw a timing. So it's all go balls. If it's not there, all right, I'm going to escape the pocket. So yeah, I thought it was all... I got to rewatch. Some of them were blitzes, but I think it was just a lot. The Bills have been just, they did it against speaking of Drake May and the Patriots in the second half of that game. And we talked about it. They just been bringing some really cool third down stuff. I broke one down the other day, but I think it's really just getting these quarterbacks to get, and it made Hurts a little frantic because he wasn't seeing and diagnosing it that well, especially in the second half. But all right, let's get to high number two, which really, I don't know if we can call this a high, but we're calling it a high because the Raiders and the Giants playing the tank battle here in Vegas. Wow. They're lucky that this game was a dual split. That was only 2 games on a doubleheader this afternoon because I did watch this more than I thought I would. But yeah, the Raiders lose, but they potentially win. Just lose, baby. Talked about this with Shiel. I think this is okay. 80% chance of getting the first overall pick now. And the Giants, and I do think, you know, they win this game 34-10. I don't know what to make of this game. I thought there's some stuff happening on offense, at least, you know, a couple nice plays on the offense, but also thought, you know, Jackson Dart had a very Jackson Dart game. I think that's the best way to put it. Andrew Thomas is sitting out because this was a tank battle. Max Crosby's on IR late. Well, he was out and then IR, and then he just posts himself on Instagram shooting baskets with his kids, which was which is just amazing. Where do you want to go for this one, Chuck? I want to get your thoughts on this game because I don't know, man. This was something.
Dude, I'll say this. Max being absolutely just repulsively sick that he couldn't play in this game between the Raiders and the Giants is peak Matt Crosby. Because I remember when I was in Vegas for the first year of the Pro Bowl games, like where they flipped it to like dodgeball and everything, every player was like, no, this is definitely better than the game, except for one person I talked to, Max Crosby. He was like, nope, I'd rather be playing a real football game right now against the best players in the world. I was like, okay, you're the only person here saying that. You know, I hope you know that. So the fact that he was upset about not being able to play in this game, not all too surprising, but holy crap, the Raiders, you just got to get to the end of the season. One more game. Because I don't even know what to say on their front. Like it was that bad. Cause like you said, the Bills Eagles game, to me, that's probably more of a one that's probably going to be more fun to watch on the All 22, not the most enthralling, like live, the live game to watch. So I was watching both at the same time, and it just felt like punishment, every time the Raiders had the ball. Because we've seen this Giants team, I mean, they're not very good, and they really didn't have too much of a problem just completely snuffing out the Raiders' offense today. They held the Raiders to 28% success rate. Man, just, you know, I mean, 10 points. You scored 10 points against one of the worst teams in the league. I'm looking at, like, the Raiders and the Jets. I'm like, dude, where do you even start here, like, in the offseason? Where do you possibly start with how far away you are from actually being competitive? And man, like Mendoza or Dante
I love a good
Moore
tankathon graphic, by the way. I love a good conversation with the tankathon graphic comes up here. I'm sorry, I look up and I saw that. I just
I'll say two things. I'll say two things. Mendoza or Dante Moore, whoever gets picked by the Raiders, God bless you, man. That's gonna be a really tough job, tough turnaround. It's probably not gonna be a pretty rookie season. Because they're just barren on offense. And the Giants, I don't know if that game makes you safe, Jackson. I'm not quite sure if that game makes you 100% safe because you still have the number two overall pick. And I mean, quite frankly, I just don't think that if you're looking at beating the Raiders as a form of like, oh, we've made like some real progress here after you threw for 13 yards last week against an actual good team in the Vikings is if that should really sell you on that, I would imagine that. Depending on where they fall, if they hit the, maybe if they hit the third or the fourth pick, we'll probably hear less about the Giants potentially picking a quarterback, but there were reports about it this morning. I'm not sure that you should jump off of that just because you beat the Raiders. So I know Giants fans weren't happy with me for saying that. I'm going to say it again. We're probably going to see them at least rumored to look at a quarterback because Joe Schoen's going to need to save his job, and that's one of the easiest ways to get the job extension button, you know?
The fact that Ian Rappaport reported that, that's more smoke than usual, you know? And they said they're assessing everything, including, and they didn't just say, we're assessing everything. They said, we're assessing everything, including the quarterback position. And so it's like, okay. The fact that was mentioned. Right. And then I think it was Joe Schoen wasn't even like, I think he is safe though, or he was not included in that. I don't know. I got to
Read that. He's safe somehow. Joe Schoen's safe somehow. I'm not quite sure. It's just John Mara, man. He can't rip it all the way off. You got to rip the Band-Aid all the way off, dude. And ultimately, if you're looking at this from a long-term perspective, Jackson Dart, I know you traded up for him, but you didn't trade away future first, and he was only the 25th pick in the draft. Like, his contract is 4 years, $16 million. Mm-hmm. That's not anything that's difficult to move off of in today's NFL, especially if the cap's going to keep going up. And even if the cap wasn't going up, it's something you could if you really wanted to move on. Yeah. Right, the backup quarterback money. So we'll see what happens there.
I think if it is the same GM and the same scouting staff, and if I'm trying to figure out whose Dart's pick was. I thought it was a joint effort because of the Shane had the connections to Ole Miss, Dable had connections to Ole Miss as well because of some of the coaches there. I think Joe Judge was there. I think Charlie Weiss he has a connection with, and Charlie Weiss Jr. And I kind of so right now it's kind of a passing the buck player. Like, all right, no, this was your guy. So it's gonna be very what the smoke that comes out the next weeks, the months is going to be very kind of interesting about them and what they actually think, because they're still at the number two pick. And I think there are two QBs that are above everybody else. I'm not the only one that thinks that. We don't know if Deontay Moore is declaring, but I think he will, because I just think no matter what, he's locked in as a top 10 pick, that's just too much to pass up. So, but even if it is Mendoza Bowl, but there's people that like Moore. I will say that there are people that like Moore than Mendoza. I think it's just that the Giants have to trust their scouting. Is I think everybody, even the consensus, I had a third round grade on him, including a bunch of other quarterbacks in this class, that if they are similar, which I think they were more of a day two grade on him, and you moved up for him because you overdraft quarterbacks, and they're not the only ones that have ever done that, but don't you trust your scouting and say, well, this guy, either Mendoza or Moore, are first round guys, top 20 guys, top 15 guys, however you consider that, true lottery pick types. So it's one of those where, like, isn't that what your the natural answer is, to get the guy that you are going to consider has a higher peak, or a guy that you think is going to be a different threshold? I don't know if they consider that. Every team is different. I mean, some teams considered, you know, Drake May undraftable because they thought he was just, I don't know, they thought footwork was uncoachable or something like that, even though it didn't matter. But you just don't know with these teams and how they consider guys. But to me, as a kind of an outside observer and how I grade these guys, I consider Mendoza more clearly better tier-wise than Dart was as a prospect. What's Dart shown as a player is really fun scrambler, really fun runner, can whip some out routes and stuff outside. Over the middle, he's a big work in progress. Against the blitz, he's a big work in progress throwing the ball. I think man coverage, he can find decent answers. Like, he's got a good arm. Everything kind of still comes out late. And that's where I get a little worried about watching him, because I wanted that to get quicker, because that shows that his mental side's getting quicker, then the accuracy and everything else speeds up because the footwork speeds up. But any true passing situation, so third and long, second and long, he kind of sets up plays like the pocket, like it's a punt return. And the quarterback that reminds me that used to do that was Cordell Stewart. You know, that's the guy that used to play like that, where it was like, I'm dead serious, man. Watch Cordell Stewart back in the day. Watch these second and long. Like, Dart had a scramble today on like second and 14. It was a good scramble, don't get me wrong. But how he looks, he drops back. He's not even looking at a route. He's just looking at the rushing lanes and just bouncing. And then he goes, whoop, and then, because he can run. But it's like, you can't live that way. And I think Mendoza and Moore are already right now at a younger age, better throwers than what Dart is. So to me, and with enough athletic ability to create a little bit, I think just their long-term outlook is more, there's just more ceiling to it. There's a higher ceiling to it. Yes, Dart's rushing ability gives him something, but I just think long-term success, franchise guy, I don't know. The other guys are just a little bit more appetizing to me. They make more sense in my brain. So I don't know. That's the logic I consider of it. Anything else in this game, though? That's my rant. Raiders had a nice drive and immediately surrendered a kick return touchdown to Deontay Banks, who immediately got a taunting penalty, which was, again, perfect for this game. Let's just move on from here. I know it's more Mendoza. It's going to be a lot of talk about these two for the next couple of weeks. It's an interesting draft. There is no consensus at any position. Like, there is none. Everyone likes Avril Reese from Ohio State. I can tell you that. Everyone likes Caleb Downs. That's about it.
I still get people telling me, we watched a Big Ten championship game. People say Mendoza sucks. So whatever. I mean, if Moore comes out, I don't really understand how this is supposed to be a worse quarterback class than like normal. I mean, thinking two guys have a chance to be franchise quarterbacks, is that really any worse than any other year? If like two guys make it out I don't really understand the kind of the crying about this. It's not like it's the Kenny Pickett draft or like the EJ Manuel draft. No. You got two guys that are bona fide top five picks if they come out. That's really not that bad.
Yeah. I called Moore Deontay Moore. Deontay Banks. I agree with that. I think that's kind of the true first round guys. That's the thing too. There's always kind of a reverse retcon that happens sometimes. Oh, that guy got drafted in the first round. It's like, yeah, but he maybe shouldn't have. Yeah. Like, and that's what we got to remember is some of the pre-draft stuff should weigh on some of this. Like, and I think I know what guys actually get selected, but like, grades matter too. And some guys, of course, outplay grades and they do so much better. But a lot of guys, it's like, I mean, I would consider Penix. I'm going to bring up Knicks, those JJ McCarthy, those guys to me were day two guys that got, you know, there's inflation with these quarterbacks. But then now we get into this class and we get into, you know, Dart. But look at the class before that. So then it was what? Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson. And I think it was, I would say the only guy that was, I mean, so Young and Stroud are more or less considered like locked in first rounders, but they had blemishes. I was Stroud QB one guy, but then Richardson, I liked a lot too, but I would say that pick four was an overdraft. But that's the thing is like, so what's that? 2.5 quarterbacks we'll call, you know, okay. That seems like a normal QB draft class to me. And I think the class from a few years ago that when it was six QBs, yeah, a couple of those guys got overdrafted. I would say only three were locked in first rounders. You know, unless how you consider McCarthy or Knicks or Penix or anything. But anyways, the consensus matters as well. All right, let's just move on to a game that was actually, I don't know if I would call it. Actually, it was entertaining, but it was actually two good games, good teams going at it, two playoff teams going at it. So high number three was the Texans beating the Chargers, have now won 8 in a row. I mean, really since week 10, and once they cleaned up that offensive line, and once Stroud came back from injury, this Texas offense, they're 18th in running back rushing success rate, 18th in explosive rate, 18th in EPA per play, they're 8th on third down, 16th in net yards per attempt. From weeks 1 through 9, they were dead last in rushing success rate. They went from 26.9% to 37.9%, 30th in explosive run rate, 26th in EPA per play. They've gone from a bottom five run game, I would say a bottom three or two run game, to a league average run game in the last two months. And now that Stroud's back, and yes, he had some blemishes, had some interceptions in this game, I thought you saw the highs of what this offense could go, because they got probably one of the best units, period, in football with their defense. And with one of the best things in football, which is their pass rush. Now the offense with a run game that's actually viable and a passing game that could be explosive, like the Higgins touchdown, which I can get to, all that stuff. I think that just makes you feel a little bit better where the Texans are out for a playoff run. But again, a wide open AFC. And I feel almost best about them more than anybody else. I mean, we'll talk about the Patriots way at the way end because of Drake May and stuff. But I mean, as far as a full team, feeling pretty good about them. And then the Chargers, their offensive line is just so sad to watch. But what'd you think about this game that had some moments? I don't know if good or bad, but just had some moments throughout this game.
Yeah, I almost turned it off in the first quarter. I was really close to just shutting this off. Cause like, is this about to be the same as the playoff game? Cause if not, I'm just going to go hang out with my family instead because this is not worth watching. But then they kind of hung around a little bit, but I don't know. It never really felt like the Chargers had a chance to win this game. And ultimately, like, I still come away feeling the same as I did, like, after the playoff game where they got absolutely dismantled by Houston last year. Like, you don't have enough. You just don't have enough. Yeah. Your quarterback is really good. Your quarterback is incredible. And the fact that you even have a chance to be in this situation, I think, says a lot about the job that Justin Herbert has done this year. I mean, some of his work, even as a scrambler, has been really, really impressive this year, where maybe you don't want him running out like that as much as he has been, but he's got the goods too. He's athletic enough, and he's got all the capabilities to really be a weapon in the open field just with his speed and just kind of the physicality that he plays with. So It's tough to kind of get here to the end of a season and you're 11-5 and it doesn't really feel like you have a great chance to make the playoffs. But look, the fact that you could even survive that game, like Justin Herbert, he was under pressure on 48% of his dropbacks in that game. Sacked 5 times. He still had a chance. Like, you still had a chance to pull that out. Man, I really can't say enough about the job he's done this season. I know like his EPA numbers for that game are going to be negative, but man, he is just playing kind of a different game than some of the other quarterbacks are playing with, where like you take that offensive line against that pass rush, man, that would absolutely nuke and sink most quarterbacks in the league. But he's able to stay alive just enough to ultimately not have enough at the end to get it done. And man, it's just kind of tough for the Chargers. Like, how do you build this? Because you keep winning so many games because you have like a base level of competency at quarterback and coaching staff where you kind of figure that out, but you just need so much more talent and you just need guys to stay healthy next year. Like, the offensive line injuries happening like this every single year, it's just not tenable. It makes me wonder like what they decide to do there next year, because maybe you just need a shake up, but that's gonna be tough since you just signed Slater to that big deal. man, you kind of just got to run it back and hope everyone stays healthy, which I don't know. It seems like a dubious plan at this point.
Which you look at, it's like, all right, definition of crazy, right? Doing the same thing, expecting different results. That's what it feels like. I'm just looking at that since week 10, which I just picked the second half of the season. Not like a clean split here. It's just every stat about the Chargers offense. 31st in sack rate, 28th in stuff rate. Just like every stat that you look at, 32nd in plays that lead to third down. So our amount of plays that are third down, meaning that they have more of their plays total are just third and fourth down plays than other teams, meaning they don't move the ball on first and second down. They don't earn first downs on first and second down. And that I felt like Groundhog Day. Every drive felt the same to start this game. Two runs out of big personnel, 2 to 3 yards, Marion Hampton getting absolutely slaughtered in between the tackles. Then Justin Herbert dropping back on third down, instantly under duress, sack, getting hit, throwing the ball, flailing around. He's got a stop sign on his left hand. You know, like he can't even grasp the ball together to like protect it. So he's just bobbling the ball as he's getting hit. If you include penalties, he got sacked 7 times. He got hit 2 more times and he got hurried 16 times. It's just like, it's not tenable. Like, yeah, they can win some games. The defense is cool. Jesse Minter does some cool stuff. You can run on this team. And that's the thing, is you can run on this defense, especially when T.R. Tart's not out there. The passing defense is really good because it's tight. It's sound. But again, they don't have a ton of aces out there. And I just think the offense, it's not like they go, oh, yeah, they can't pass protect, but at least they can run the ball. We're just bringing up the Hampton stats right now, 14 carries for 29 yards. Thank God I have him in fantasy and he scored that last touchdown. Otherwise, I'd be very angry. but it's just, I don't know. I thought the one thing that they did nice, and it was Quentin Johnson had the big catch on 3rd and 13, was when they went to empty, they had some really nice moments. And empty is when there's nobody in the backfield with the quarterback. And it's kind of counterintuitive, but actually it's something that you can lean into if your O-line's not great, and you have a freak at quarterback like the Chargers do and Herbert, is if you get into empty, it simplifies the defense on the back end, which isn't the craziest thing against the Texans. They don't run a ton, but it also just like simplifies what you get up front. Like you can get simpler pass rush lanes. You kind of commit, kind of like just make everything just that only one or two or three things. And when you have backup offensive linemen, the weirdest way, it kind of just makes everything a little bit more regular for the quarterback in the O-line. I know it sounds counterintuitive, but it's like leaning into the punch. And like the two philosophies against a good pass rusher are either wad it up with a bunch of blockers or spread it out and get the ball out quick. And out on empty, they had 5 plays, 112 yards. 3 were successful, and it should have been 4 because one of them was the interception off of Gadsden's hands. Almost KO'd him if he didn't put his hands up. Perfect volleyball set to the goal line that Gadsden had. And I just think that's what they have to do, is they have to be so specific because they can't block anything up. And also, I just don't trust Greg Roman to be like, you know, come up with a cool design. Like, we'll talk about the Dolphins offense a little later. And it's just like, it's so remarkable when you watch these teams that are starting like Quinn Ewers and the stuff that they're able to design up and draw up against blitzes. And then you watch the Chargers and it's like, I joke about this, but it's very much missionary position. Like, it's just like, they don't change it up at all. They just get big bodies and run the most at you offense possible. And it works because they have the freaking Terminator at quarterback and then they have some decent receivers, but man, it's just like, it's just not inventive whatsoever. And it's just so frustrating to watch over time.
Yeah, not good stuff. I just the Harbaugh family, they gotta let this guy go. They just gotta let him go. It's time. It's time. I mean, dude, like look how much better sometimes. Like the Ravens have looked like since they got Todd Monken in there. You just need some different ideas sometimes.
They just need a modern passing game, and just like he's very scared to ever go off like conventional wisdom. Like, okay, it's this situation. Start with a screen. Or like, okay, we're in 4-minute drill. We can't run a bootleg. We got to go run. Okay, we're at the goal line. All right, we're going to run on first down out of big personnel. And if you ever guys know, ever knows this, if you're, it's like goal line, like 1, 2, or 3 yard line, second down basically comes a passing down. A lot of offenses, if they get stuffed on first down, they're going to run play action on second down. And that's what the Chargers do every single freaking time. It's just one of those things where it's just very frustrating to watch. Oh, I do want to say Texas offense, Stroud, even though he had some sloppy moments, I thought the interception to James was like, he just anticipated like a dig. The first touchdown to Higgins was awesome because it was attacking the attackers. Like Jesse Minter and this Chargers defense, they like to have those safeties. The safeties were at 6 yards depth. They're in quarters. I think they're in quarters. Yeah, quarters. At 6 yards on third and one at the 25. there was basically goal line defense against a shotgun formation. And so the Texans run like drive, which crosser into a dig. And then it was awesome. Stroud just alerted the post. And I just love that when it's like the defense is like, all right, you're going to run crossers. Like, the Bills offense does over and over, and we're going to saw it off like the Eagles defense did. Well, guess what? Safeties want to drive down. It's 5 yards on third and one. Just hit you over the top to Higgins. Same thing on the Knoll touchdown. Safety gets tied down, Tony Jefferson, but boom, just passes over the top, hit him over the top. And I like that too. Like Hutchinson, the receiver, got used on pass protection, but I don't know. Texas offense, it's not all perfect, but just a little bit more life. And that's why in the AFC, I kind of feel best about them. Just what they are kind of as a whole team. I think their special teams is okay too, but all right. Want to get to some lows? Low number one, the Packers can't be trusted. Or you could also call this the backup quarterback battle that happened in Baltimore. Oh no, this happened to Lambeau. Dang it. I just wanted to get all the B words in there. Ravens win this game 41-24. Derrick Henry just absolutely marched on the Packers defense. I've been getting on the Ravens using all this I formation stuff and just getting like not being great. And then they get into I formation with Patrick Carr and just steamrolled the Packers defense. 34 plays out of I formation for 195 yards, 3 touchdowns, 56% success rate. Derrick Henry goes for 216, 36 runs, 4 touchdowns. Hopefully you had him in your fantasy final. Because I believe those were all career highs for Henry, or at least near it. I think it was career highs for all of them. Snoop Huntley was in this game, did enough, but it was the run game was the story. And Malik Willis had some cool moments for the Packers offense. But I just think that Packers run defense is battered right now up front on top of Micah Parsons, just all the other stuff that's happened up front there. And it's just, whew, you felt it in this game. But what'd you think about this matchup?
Just bludgeoning. I mean, this is probably like you can't win in the playoffs with the defense this bad.
Nope.
And you know, the thing is, like, we talked about it before, like the Broncos game, even before, you know, Micah got hurt, and that kind of became a season defining injury for them. It's not like they were actually a good defense really then either. Like, they would start hot, and then as the game went on, they were basically like a bottom four defense the rest of the way. And now with the injury, it's just become too much to handle. I mean, this is nuts. Like, the first thing I want to look up after that game was like, what was Derrick Henry's like yards before contact? Because it felt like, I was watching that game with my brother, and he was like, man, does it feel like he's faster like today? He's got a little more juice. I'm like, yeah, but like also no one's touching him too. He was averaging 1.9 yards before contact per rush. So 2 yards, 2 yard runway before anyone gets a hand on him. And then after contact, 4 yards per rush after contact. On first and second down, he had 30 carries for 177 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, just a complete bludgeoning for the game, the Ravens run game. If you pull out scrambles, they had a 55% success rate. They averaged 0.32 EPA per rush. That's like an MVP passing season. It's an MVP passing season from the rushing game in one game. It's wholly unacceptable for the Packers. Like, you can't. I know Derrick Henry is good. This was one of the best games of his career. We shouldn't be saying that about him at this point in his career, because it's not been one of the best seasons of his career. Man, that's really frustrating. And you got like enough good moments from Malik Willis where, you know, maybe with a normal defensive effort, you could have had a chance to win this game at the end of it. Both Tyler Huntley and Malik Willis finished with QBRs over 90 in this game. 91 for Tyler Huntley, 94.5 for Malik Willis. Like, really efficient game for both of them. But one team gave up 41 points and absolutely had no shot to stop the rushing game for the Ravens at any point. You know, maybe if Jordan Love come back and you get super hot, you can catch someone by surprise in the playoffs. But you have like the easiest blueprint to lose a game. If someone can just get under center and run it 50 times and at no point feel like they're going to get stopped, you've lost. It's the easiest way to win a football game. That was like a season-ending loss for them. Cooked.
And you put it on film now. That's the thing, too. Yes. It's like, once you put it on film, though, even if others didn't have an idea, they go, oh, okay, we'll just watch what the Ravens did against you guys. Like, yeah, now everyone has Derrick Henry. But right now, if the season ended today, and I think this is actually the most likely matchup, the Packers would play the Bears in the wild card weekend, 2-7. The Packers are locked in at the 7th seed. But it'd be 2-7. And the Bears have one of the most explosive, one of the best run games in the NFL. No splits needed there. Just whatever split you want to look at. Second half of the year, since their bye week, full season, whatever. One of the best run games in the NFL. So I totally agree with you about the run thing. And I think this is something that's needs to be said about, like, oh, okay, yes, you have a great quarterback. Why don't you pass it all the time? If you can run the ball for 5 or more yards a pop, there is no need to do anything else. If you're at least in a neutral game script, there is zero need. Because if you can guarantee that, we're going to do it all day. When people learn football from Pop Warner on up, from Little League on up, the first thing you're taught is how to run the ball. You're first taught how to run block. You're taught how to run defend. You're taught how the running back is the best player, you know, always. Eye formation, no one's in spread. I think there's more of that now these days. But that's what you kind of learn. And you get more complex and more skills as you go along. That's throwing the ball and doing other stuff. But if you could just do this and line up in the I formation and run nothing but zone and lead blocks, that stuff guys have more reps on than anything. They're going to just be able to, I mean, blow. If you rewatch this game, just even go on YouTube and just watch the shortened game. I think you can watch like a 20-minute version. You can go on that. Watch all the double teams that happened from the Ravens offensive line on the Packers defensive tackles. Those guys are blown off the ball. And I'm not, the Ravens offensive line's been down this year. They've been explosive, but not efficient. Those guys are getting blown off like 5 yards off the ball. And then, like you just said, Derrick Henry was 2 yards before contact. You can just see the eye test with the double team. So it's just, they become matchup based as opposed to a true contender. A true contender to me means no matter who they go against, they're going to be the favorites. To them, it's like, well, now if they go against the Bears, if they go against the Rams, obviously the Rams are the best team. But the other teams are just starting to kind of look at them sideways. I know Malik Willis played. Thought you got to see the good of Malik Willis. Some beautiful deep balls, especially to the outside. Christian Watson had a great throw to Christian Watson on a seam on the touchdown. Awesome ability to avoid sacks and run around a little bit. He's fun. I still think Jordan Love is much better. But I think these guys get to sit in week 18. I think the Packers are playing the Vikings in week 18. So what Willis, if he's healthy, or Clayton Tune go out there and have some fun against Brian Flores, and we'll get Jordan Love ready for the wild card weekend. But any thoughts on Willis and the Packers offense and the Ravens defense?
I mean, it's incredible. I'm with you. It's incredible that Malik Willis has improved this much. It's like, he's so much better. Like, for if anyone who might not like remember what he looked like, go back to like his rookie season, the Titans, they played a game in Europe against the Ravens. Whoa, it was like, man, I don't think this guy could ever start another game. And this is why you take bets on the guys with the traits, you know, maybe they improve. And all of a sudden you've got a firecracker backup quarterback that can come in and, you know, score 24. I think the Ravens defense maybe might be feeling a little icky after that game with how Malik Willis played and some of the explosives they were able to generate. But ultimately it didn't matter on the other side. It's going to be interesting to see like which team, you know, bites some Malik Willis and just how replicable some of this is. I'm rooting for him. Seems like a good dude. I would still have a little buyer's beware, but man, like he's gotten so much better since the start of his career. I think my last Packers take is, I think we're a little too fast to crown those linebacker duos because they look stinky, man. Like, dude, they can't play in the box. They can't do it. And you cannot be a top tier linebacker if you can't play in the box. Like it shouldn't require like your entire starting defensive line to be healthy if you're going to be an impact linebacker. And they are just getting mowed off the ball. Like this is like where you see, okay, that's why Richard Cooper was the second round pick instead of a first round pick, because when it's time to play downhill without perfect surroundings, you're probably going to get absolutely mashed. Like they have been for the past, you know, a couple of weeks. The Bears did it to him twice in the past month. The Ravens did it to him. The Broncos scored 34 on them. The Lions put up numbers. I mean, this is pretty alarming, I think, for their whole run defense standpoint. And I think it just kind of makes you rethink what the blueprint on the spine of that defense is, because it's certainly not good enough in the front seven right now.
Yeah. The defense, they need an absolute hoss in the middle. That's what they need more than anything. No, that's a great point about Cooper, because he's a that was his knock in college, is, or most college linebackers, is they play out in space. They don't have to take on a lot of blocks. You know, it's a lot of run and hit, run and hit, run and hit. And he's great at that. And he was so much better at taking on blocks. But then you're going against Patrick Ricard. You're going against, you know, he's giving up 50
Ben Johnson,
pounds
the Bears, you know, yeah. Sean Payton, they got horses up front too. It's tough.
Yes. And the guards climbing to him, and line and tight ends that can actually block, you know, not just like, you know, receiving tight ends like that. That's where you kind of feel in this game. So, no, that's a great point. You don't want all hammerheads. Like, you need guys that can run, but you also need guys that can use their hands. I like Evan Williams a lot. No, but it's that they just can't. No one can get off the block. It's like they're just getting blown back. And I don't know. It's just, if teams are just going to run the ball, it doesn't matter how explosive your offense is. They'll just hold on to the ball, and then it turns every drive into got to have it. Because then it's like, all right, if we don't get a touchdown here, we might not get the ball for 7 minutes. Because, all right, and then now, okay, you only get so many bites at the apple, and you're such an explosive offense. You want to be able to get as many bites as the apple as you want. Also, before we kick it to the next thing, we'll say that anyone's going like, yeah, the Malik Willis thing, he is way better than he got at Liberty. This was what you're hoping for. You hoped that he developed into this. I'm curious, like you said, like who goes for it. There's only two quarterbacks in this class that I think are worthy of being first rounders. There's a lot of teams that have seats at the table or seats available at quarterback. I mean, I kind of want to see the Steelers.
Yeah, Steelers. If they are comfortable with their quarterback off their third ACLs there, go for it. Me, I'd want to sign someone just to see, just a little protection.
Just take a little bit. Yeah, just take
So next year's not total wash.
Yeah. I want to rewatch this game on film. I just want to see how he's kind of looking at stuff. Because he still is not like the perfect quarterback progressing, because I think LaFleur does a great job with LaFleur actually like just knows how to dial up plays for him. Like LaFleur with a running quarterback is actually pretty fun. Like, he does some cool stuff with him, and it's pretty fun. But Willis has gotten so much better operating between the numbers. He went from a nothing burger to like being so much better and actually being live in that area. So yeah, I'm curious. He's a fun little subplot for the offseason. I'm sure the Packers, because Tune had to go in. So hopefully he can play week 18, because him against Flores should be interesting. especially if like Willis is playing for a contract basically this offseason. Also, I looked it up because you brought up the yards before contact stat. The Chargers since week 10, 0.61 yards before contact per run. 0.61 since week 10. It's probably even worse if I looked up full season. But all right, low number two, lower than the yards before contact stat. Does anybody want to win the NFC South? Like, no. I understand the Panthers not winning. The Seahawks are a wagon. I know, like, Darnold, ha, 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 and all that stuff. The run game could do some stuff, though, today. But that defense is freaking insane. That defense. Now I got some stats for that one. And then the Dolphins, with Quinn Ewers, beat the Bucs 20-17. We'll start with the game in Charlotte. You're near Charlotte right now, right?
I am near Charlotte right now.
You're near Charlotte, yeah. So you're neck of the woods right now.
Yeah, probably. You could hear the thunder from the Seahawks defense. I'm like 20 minutes away from the stadium. Could hear the thunder from the Seahawks defense in that game. Holy crap. Dude, I mean,
they were sawed them off.
So, you know, what's funny today is my dad had a bunch of his friends over, and they're all Panthers fans, right? And, you know, when that game is going in the first half, they're hooting and hollering. I can hear them from my room going crazy. And then all of a sudden, deathly quiet. Deathly quiet. And I was like, what happened? Oh, halftime happened. That's what happened. And, you know, the whole Bryce Young hit 16 yards across his first 16 passing attempts. Woof. That was a rough one for the Panthers offense. And, like, I know T-Mac, he was sick out there. It looked like he wasn't 100%. But, man, the Seattle's defense absolutely gave it to him. And the run game on the other side played well. Like, Zach Charbonnet had a great game. Ken Walker had a... You know, his chaotic carry on 3rd and 30 that he absolutely lives for. But outside of that, man, the NFC South, garbage. I mean, dude, the Bucs allowed basically Quinn Ewers to have a game that Tua hasn't had this season. I don't think anyone wants to win this division. So I'm sticking with the Panthers, though. That was brutal. It just reaffirms whatever, you know, I've said about them this season or what I thought about them this season. It's not quite a good football team. And I think when you start looking between like the margins, even in their win, like against the Rams, real shaky, like not repeatable stuff. So now they play the Bucks next week. Winner takes all. We all lose for it, though, because I don't think either of these teams should be allowed in the playoffs. That was disgusting.
They'll either play what? They'll play Seahawks, 49ers, or Rams, one of those three? Yeah, they're absolutely slaughtered. Absolutely slaughtered if they play those teams. I'll start with this. The Seahawks pass defense, because it was just like the Panthers couldn't operate. I saw one cool Coker play. I'll say that. They went 9% conversion rate on third down, which is the second lowest conversion rate this season. Their gains on third down, 8 yards on third and 7, 3 yards on third and 12, 1 yard on third and 2, gains of 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, so 5 of them. Lost 2 yards, lost 11 yards. So if you're doing math at home, the Panthers lost more yards on third down today than they gained. They had one, you mentioned it, but they finished with 1.7 net yards per pass attempt, 2.7 yards per play, 0 explosive plays. It's only the fourth time that's happened this season by an offense. And the Seahawks offense could really just kind of make mistakes. Darnold could throw interceptions in the red zone, can just have these moments. Doesn't matter because the Panthers could not throw the ball whatsoever. And their run game has dropped off in the back half of the season. It's turned into like a bottom five run game, which was a super strength for them. It's just because defenses aren't threat. They know what the gig is up like a little bit. The jig is up a little bit. They just know, oh, okay, you guys are just going to run it downhill all the time. And we don't have to really worry about too much about bootlegs. We don't have to worry too much about play action. You guys attacking deep, downhill, downhill, downhill. So everybody's downhill against the run right now. And it's a very at you run game. Well, now we're going at you with more bodies in the box. If we don't have a game script that works and we need to really chuck it, we need big plays, we're not getting it. 63.6% of their drives finished with no first downs or a touchdown. 139 total yards. Yeah, the Seahawks offense could just do whatever they wanted today because their defense was just absolutely controlling this game. But I did think Seahawks run game has had some encouraging performances. They're getting up to about league average, which is big for them because the explosive passing offense tapered off a little bit from literally the most explosive offense of the new millennium to more like good explosion. It's hard to, Sheehy got a little banged up today, but Jason, if you kind of take him away, all right, now you got to make Darnold operate a little bit, poke at the offensive line a little bit. Some stuff happens, but the Panthers run defense is 30th in DVOA since week 8. This is why I should have started Charbonnet as my flex this week, but I will not be bitter as long as I still win. But I just thought that it was just like it, the Panthers offense, especially their passing game, is just so frustrating to watch. And then you just watch it against a big boy defense and you're like, oh, you guys might make the playoffs, but you guys are so far away from actually being like a team that's going to win a playoff game as opposed to just making it in here. More thoughts on that game? You want to get to what happened in Miami?
Nah, let's get some Miami.
Okay. Oh yeah. Also, by the way, Panthers took a knee to end the game on fourth down.
Oh, that was embarrassing.
To the Seahawks to kneel it. That was disgusting. Don't see that much. Don't see that much, especially from a playoff team. That was quitters. Yeah. But they have an eliminator match next week against the Bucks, who lost to the Dolphins and Quinn Ewers today. This Bucks offense is just rough. And their defense is pretty rough, too, but what they were allowed on the ground, especially the first three quarters. But thoughts on this game? Like you said, the Bucks are just like they're just zombies right now, even though they're getting healthy. It's the weirdest team.
Yeah, like they suck, man. They're not good. I'm a little surprised by just like how like just putrid they are. In the first half. And I think that to me, like that kind of like you said, that applies to the whole team, because in the first half, the Dolphins, who started a 7th-round rookie quarterback, and just because you've heard of him doesn't change the fact that they started a 7th-round rookie quarterback today. They had a 50% success rate in the first half. Quinn Ewers averaged 9 net yards per pass attempt. What the hell, Tampa Bay? Like, how? How? Like, this doesn't make any sense. You cannot be this bad. Like honestly, this week, and I guess this iteration of the NFC South, because the NFC South is absolutely worse than it was last year, because Tampa Bay is a good deal worse than they were last year. This has made me reconsider like our whole playoff structure with how we're doing this stuff. Because how can you look at this team and say that they deserve to be in the first half, to be in the first round of the playoffs or any round of the playoffs? Quinn Ewers, I think he had more yards in the first half than Tua's had in any game in this season. Dude, how does that happen? He's a seventh round rookie quarterback making his second start. And I think Mike McDaniel, maybe he's gotten probably a little bit too much crap this year because, man, like the run game has been strong. Another good game from the run, their rushing attack again today. Overall, positive EPA, like even when stuff started tailoring off, they still figure out how to make plays. But if you're a playoff team like Tampa Bay, that's just inexcusable. And I'm just a little surprised that the offense has fallen this far and Baker has become like this untrustworthy of a player, because it just doesn't seem like it doesn't, like I've never believed that you could put the ball in his hands and say, hey, could you actually go out and win anything of a consequence for us? But it's gotten to a point where they probably just need to go find someone else next year. Like maybe you do a little small extension, but like the thought that he would still get like the big time extension that maybe people were looking at after last season, that is gone and out the window. So I don't know. Maybe you draft someone and run this back for one more year, but they are firmly in like stuck in mud mode where it's like, okay, yeah, that Super Bowl was cool, but it's been about 5 years since that happened. So, you know, we're going to have to start actually thinking about what the next era of this offense looks like and what the team looks like. And right now, man, they might need to strip it down to the studs and start over, because they look rough, man. You shouldn't be in this spot against the Dolphins team, who I will say the Dolphins probably not as bad as we thought coming into the year. Like they've definitely played up and played better. Yeah. And I think everyone there, you know, on the coaching staff, they've earned another year to try that thing again with maybe another quarterback, but it's not Quinn Ewers. And the Buccaneers, like, they kind of made it seem like maybe it should be Quinn Ewers, and no, it should not be. You gotta stand taller against a defense, against an offense that's playing, again, a seventh round rookie quarterback.
One of my running bits, I feel like not only just me, you, and I think anyone that kind of we dive deep into these games is like, oh, Todd Bowles against a rookie quarterback. Wait till you see this. It didn't feel like that at all today. I just thought the Dolphins just had so many answers. Ewers knew where to go. He's scrambling when he needed to, which is scary, because then it's like, okay, well, I thought the Bucs defense, yes, there's some holes they have to figure out. They need more juice up front. Linebackers need to get figured out. But then the offense is just like, they're nothing. The run game is bottom five, basically. It's more like bottom 10, I'd say. But last year it was top 10. Running back runs success rate, they're 22nd. Last year they were 7th. It's dropped like 6%. Explosive runs, they've dropped from 20th to 6th. This was the one stat I found that the biggest difference from last year, and again, this is what we've talked about, like you take away the screens, you take away the easy buttons, the run game that just packing up 4 or 5 yards, 6 yards a pop, screens are picking up 8-10 yards a pop, and now making them drop back over and over because the Bucs don't run a lot of play action, because Baker is not good turning his back to the defense and doesn't like to do it. That's what happened at the end of his Cleveland tenure. Stefanski wanted to do what he wanted to do, and Baker is a shotgun-heavy quarterback. He is a true air raid quarterback. Gun, throw out routes, throw crossers. That's how he attacks. He's played in gun and air raid since high school. That is what he is. That's what he's best at in the NFL. Last year, I thought Cohen did such a good job of balancing it all out, putting the run game from the gun, the screen game working as well, the receiver screens, the O-line was playing better. But then this year, it's just like none of those easy buttons are easy. And then you're getting into Baker having to be hero ball, and that's not – he becomes the worst version of himself. The interception that he had on the deep ball, he had a pump fake that wasn't a turnover but turned into should have been a fumble. In the red zone, he gets trouble when he's pump faking. Whenever you see him pump faking, you don't want that happening. The Bucs had a field goal blocked, which wasn't great either. And then I just think on defense, they're so kind of malleable. Like, and again, like Todd Bowles has some cool blitz stuff, but on easy downs for a guy like McDaniel, who's very thoughtful with the run game and where he puts everybody, the Dolphins just kept putting bigger bodies on the field. The Bucs would match with base 3-4. They would spread out the front. The offense would. So you get Vita Vey and the other like kind of D tackles, D ends in the 3-4 front. they're tight, but then the outside linebackers are really wide. So if you saw the big runs the Dolphins hit, they were kind of, one was trap, one was zone. They were kind of just creating these natural run lanes. And it was just all McDaniel was doing. It was just manipulating with formations and motions, which is what good coaches do. But it like wasn't, it was kind of like, yeah, this is easy. You know, kind of like, all right, we'll just do it this way this time. We'll just do it this way this time. They hit A-chain a couple times on these like lead swing plays. It's just that the defense hasn't caught up. And now that they don't have dudes, it just feels very gettable by any offense that has a real pulse. The first three quarters, and the Bucs did some pass statting at the end, so their stats are kind of a little weird. But the Dolphins, 61% rushing success rate on 17 runs, three explosives, 32 yards, 15 yards, 18 yards, 0.35 EPA per rush through the first three quarters. And it's just, so the defense is gettable. The offense, the run game is not as easy as it was. I think yards after contact, they went from first in the league in the NFL last year. They're averaging 3.67 yards after contact last year. Bucky Irving, of course, Rashad White. This year, they're 19th in yards after contact per run. Just not as explosive. Everything is just a high wire act for this team, and Baker is just not playing the confident Baker, and they're not playing a system that's just like conducive to creating these explosive and everything. Yeah, I don't know. It's a very kind of like they're missing some stuff right now. And I think my one theory in why the run game has really dropped off, it's the same O-line coach. I know Worf's battled some injuries. They've had some injuries, but they've gotten healthier. I think that they're trying to package plays together in the sense of like what Liam Cohen and the Jags are doing, what Sean McVay does with Stafford, where they package big a lot of plays together. Okay, we're going to do this run play against this look, this pass play against this look, this run play against this look, and this run play against this look. We're going to do a shift in motion to get to that, to get some stuff that changes it all up. My theory is that the new OC doesn't know how to package them correctly. You know, he goes, okay, we're going to do this motion to get this guy isolated or to get this. And so they're running into bad boxes. And right, because that's what I'm kind of noticing. It's like the blocks are fine, but then like a safety or a linebacker is making the play unblocked. And that means to me, that means it's a bad number count. That means you're running. And when I say a bad number count, you're running a run play that truly is unblockable against that look. So that's one of my theories. I just think that they've lost some thoughtfulness in this offense. And then Baker is not the quarterback to kind of like hide that away. He kind of rides the good and rides the bad. Good, you know, it's just that's the quarterback he kind of is. So, yeah. And this team might make the freaking playoffs. All right, we'll go to low number three. Another team that might make the playoffs because they're playing the Ravens next week in week 18. Oh, yeah, by the way, the Bucks and Panthers are playing an eliminator match when these teams are making the playoffs. And same with low number three. Steelers just can't beat the Browns. they could win and then just make the playoffs and it'll all be hunky-dory. Instead, they lose 13-6. Steelers and Ravens are playing for the division next week, but what? All right. What thoughts on this game? Because this is, I'll just say, I'm sorry for swearing, but this is ugly.
I watched every single play of this game. I watched every single play. I thought today I thought today was going to be the day when I could bail on watching the Browns because Myles Garrett was going to sack. It's the only reason to watch. If you say you're watching for Shedeur Sanders, you're lying because he's boring. These games are so boring. And Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, I don't care what they say at any press conference this week. They've decided that avoiding being sacked by Myles Garrett was more important than winning the game and locking in a playoff spot. You have to play Baltimore next week. Did you see Derrick Henry on Saturday? Did you really want to risk that? Seriously, that was embarrassing. And it was just short throw after short throw after short throw after short throw. I mean, dude, there's plays where Aaron's under pressure and he's throwing the ball 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage to some poor running back who's just getting lit up by like the closing flat defender, like just getting knocked silly, and they never change. And I also think Myles Garrett deserves some blame here because for not getting he does deserve blame for not getting the sack record because as the game went along, dude, I noticed especially in the second half they were mostly using like Kenneth Gainwell as the chip player, and no matter what I was so keen in on this that I would be surprised if I was wrong. There was one play where Myles Garrett, like, he flipped at Mason Graham and decided to rush him 3-tech. But every other play outside of that in the second half, he was outside the chip player. So what did Arthur Smith do? Like, as the game went along, just cheated that chip player over and over and over and over and over.
Watch the 2 minute drive.
And he still kept lining up outside the chip player.
Wide 13.
That's what I'm saying. You're not even in a wide nine anymore. Like, you're in a 13. You're outside. You're at, like, basically the slot, man. You're never going to get there. And the impressive thing was he almost did one time. One time he almost got there. But, dude, you're so far away. You're on a different planet. And the fact that, like, he never realized that Arthur Smith, they were just cheating him. Like, half a yard, like, every drive. And before you know it, dude, you're almost on the damn sideline. Get in. You're too far away. Okay, let's say you line up in between Kenneth Gainwell and the left tackle. You're Myles Garrett. Okay.
Right.
What? A little shit from Kenneth Gainwell? Right. That's going to ruin what you got going on here. I thought he overthought that a little bit. But, man, that was maybe the worst football game that I've watched all year, because it started off interesting, like, in the first quarter, where, you know, I thought Shador, like, I thought he actually had some nice throws, not the touchdown to Harold Fannin, but, like, some of the stuff, like, in between the numbers where he's working the Judy, I thought he actually had some nice plays. And then Shador tapped out of that game in the second, like, after the first quarter, because he wasn't really participating in it to any degree, because he had, like, another one of those games where it's super high time to throw, really low air yards per attempt. So, like, dude, you're just sitting back there and just throwing these checkdowns and letting people get hammered. Like, how many third and nine, 2 yard throws are you going to do before you actually just let one of these things rip and try to be a damn quarterback? They had six first downs after the first quarter. Six.
I'm looking at it right now.
It's not viable, man. Like, this was puke. The whole thing was putrid. Like, the Browns offense was abysmal again. And now you're out Judkins and Fannin, which were the only two players that were consistently moving the ball for you. Aaron Rodgers decided that it was so important to avoid being sacked by Myles Garrett, which I don't quite understand. Why, if you're the last sack on the streak, why does that matter? Like, dude, all 23 of those sacks are getting put on a poster.
It has to be the far stray hand thing. It has to be, because he'll get the comparisons. You know, he hates that.
How is that more important than winning the game? How is that more important than winning the game? I know. And then Myles Garrett, dude, you're trying to get sacks from freaking Timbuktu, dude. Get closer to the line of scrimmage. Get closer to the ball. Eerie. And you, like, dude, he probably would have gotten the sack if he just lined up in a 5 instead of a wide 13. If you just lined up, I posted on Blue Sky, like, really right before he almost got the sack from one of those wide alignments. I'm like, dude, get shoulder to shoulder with an offensive tackle and just rush up the field. To be serious though, like, a lot of these guys who are that athletic, they think, oh, if I get the runway, just power speed, through and pass, right, I'll be able to speed the power pass. No, not when the quarterback's throwing it under 2.5 seconds every single play.
1.2 seconds. Yeah.
And then snap, catch, one of the fire. Funny things. I think it's for second half only, it might have been, but Rodgers' passes to wide receivers today, it was something like 8 air yards per attempt, 2.2 seconds to throw. And some of these, like, dude, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, I feel bad on some of them because that ball is coming out so fast. You don't even have a chance to turn around and make a play on it, man. A horrible football game all around. Everyone involved should be absolutely ashamed of themselves.
What'd you think about the MVS target fade ball for on fourth and ball game? What'd you think about that one? MVS versus a Pro Bowl quarter.
That was DPI. No, don't bail him out on DPI on that.
It was domination.
It was a receiver horrible.
Getting smothered.
If you look at the credentials of the cornerback and the receiver there, that went exactly as you thought it would go. Oh my God, that was such a bad football game.
It's a great example of how corners and tackles and pass rush are more alike, and then pass rushers and receivers are more alike, because that looked like an offensive tackle smothering like a bad pass rusher. just going like, yes. Yeah. And everyone's like, holding. It's like, no, he's just getting his ass kicked. No, he's just getting dominated. Yeah. Like, that's what it looks like. That's what those look like. I know people think, they must be holding there. It's like, nope, they're just getting dominated. Oh, okay, so Myles Garrett referred to it. Our friend Keegan Abdu looked this up from Next Gen Stats. Steelers, I had a clear plan to limit Myles Garrett. They chip blocked him or double teamed him 16 times, 41%. Of the 23 pass rushes where Garrett did not draw extra attention, the Steelers threw a quick pass or ran a design roll out away from Garrett 17 times. So really only 6 times that he had a pass play where he's essentially unaccounted for. Rodgers, I mean, there's one play. This was, and I think I tweeted it, but they checked to a run, Rodgers did, on 3rd and 4 in the fourth quarter. And that was the play that I was like, wow, this offense is just not it. This is like the best version of what they wanted. I know DK Metcalf was out, and I know Darnell Washington's banged up. But it was against man coverage. They checked to a run play, and it just gets blown up. I think it goes for a TFL. Old Rodgers would have checked to slant flat. And I know that's a meme and it's a joke, but literally that's what he used to do. If it was man coverage, especially with Devontae Adams, boom, we're on a slant flat, baby. And we're getting 5 yards, 7 yards, and look at that. And if it doesn't come open, I'll bounce around and create something off script. He ain't doing that today. He ain't doing that anymore. And so that was one of those where it's like, it's just become so much go balls. If they get man coverage, and especially with DK not in there, he'll be back. No, he won't be back next week. So if they lose, boom, done season. But he might come back for the playoffs if they win. But against man coverage today, 4 of 13, 35 yards, 1 sack, 2.7 yards per attempt. They just have zero juice in the pass catcher room. It's just, and if the run game's not churning and defense can focus on the run game, it just goes nowhere. Rodgers went, this was the stat I really wanted to share. This is an epitomization of why you hunt deep balls and why you hunt explosive plays. Rodgers on throws of 10 or fewer air yards, 12 of 18, 102 yards. Shadur on throws of 10 or more air yards, 6 for 8, 133 yards, no touchdowns or anything. But that's why deep balls are better. You just get one of those. I don't care how many dink and ducks you get. I can just get one 30-yard gain. That's better than your 5 4-yard gains that you have to earn and get over and over and over. But the Steelers went 3 of 15 on third down. 9 of those were 6 yards to go or fewer. So they actually got the third downs they wanted. And they went 3 of 15 on third down. Like, it's just not like a real offense. Like, again, if they make the playoffs, can win a game. Cool Jack Sawyer interception, I guess. I'll give them that. The 2-minute drill was actually, they had some stuff going on because Rodgers was actually pushing the ball. But I mean, this offense, they could potentially go against the Bills, the Texans, the Chargers. Like, I saw when they played these teams. Like, it's not great. So I don't know. This team's a weird, weird team. But anyways. Steelers and Ravens play next week. Loser leaves town. Eliminator match, whatever you want to call it. Cage fight to enter the playoffs. And I don't know how to feel, but I don't know. I feel a little bit better about the Ravens right now than I do with the Steelers, especially if Lamar Jackson's playing.
I'm full out rooting for the Ravens now. That was pathetic. Aaron, you do not deserve to make the playoffs. It was really legitimately.
You want to get on the highway reel? You want to get on the highway?
It's not that bad, man. It's not that bad. When we are at Aaron Rodgers' Hall of Fame induction, no one would have been thinking, oh, man, remember he was the last sack on Myles Garrett's 23? Right. What the hell was that? Play the game, man. Funny.
Oh, yeah, that happened. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And especially if you're not giving yourself up like Favre did. Yeah. He had a play where he got strip sacked and the ball popped up and it ended up being a check down. But it didn't look, no one thought it was a strip sack at first because that's how all of his passes were the whole day. Yeah. Where he was just about to get tackled and he just popped them. Because I didn't think it was a strip sack until they showed the replay. Yeah. And I was like, I just thought it was another, I'm about to get hit. Boop. Like, flip the ball up, get it out. Yeah, that I thought that was pretty indicative. That was fun, Chuck. We made it fun. NFL is always fun. We only got one more week of regular season football, so might as well make this fun. Before we wrap it up, I do want to give a shout out to two guys that had great performances for quick extra credit. Drake May. 5 touchdowns, got to sit like a homecoming game. He had a QBR of 99.8. That means a quarterback with that performance wins 99.8% of the time. And then Trey McBride in a game that was ugly for the Cardinals, set the single season reception record for tight ends. Wanted to give that a shout out because that is a big deal and it's worth mentioning because Trey McBride is really cool. Michael Wilson's cool, but Trey McBride's really cool. He's a good
player. There any mention of Trey McBride breaking that record today? Like,
unless you're watching the game, no. It was one of my multi-views, so that was it.
100 years of silence for the Arizona Cardinals. 100 years of silence.
It's the Bidwells, man. I think the rest of the NFL owners like it that way. Okay, here's your money. Okay, bye-bye. We'll give you the Super Bowl every 6, 7, 8 years. Okay, bye-bye. Just keep doing your thing. Keep doing your thing. You guys are doing great. Just keep it on. I got your vote. Sounds good. That's why they're still there. But no, we're closing it out today. A lot of fun with my guy, Chuck. I'll be back on Tuesday. I know we got some games in week 18. We'll find something fun to talk about, but I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That is Charles McDonald. You can find him at Forverts on social media as well. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us on YouTube like some of you are right now on this live show. Check out all of our great content here on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe there as well. I would really, really appreciate it. We would really appreciate it. Thanks to Stone Awesome Madison behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Hope you guys had a great holidays, a great Christmas, and had safe travels. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.